What's up, rockers? Welcome. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Just in case you missed it, last show we discussed the crazy stories brought by metal bands. Today, I want to shift the music scene and fast forward a bit to new wave rock. So new wave rock was originally used as a catch-all for the music that emerged after punk rock, including punk itself, but it may be viewed more as post-punk. Although new wave shared punk's characteristics, the artists were actually more influenced by the lighter strains of 1960s pop and kind of opposed to more mainstream corporate rock, which they considered creatively stagnant and a generally abrasive and political bent of punk rock. Common characteristics of new wave music include a humorous or quirky pop approach, the use of electronic sounds, and a distinctive visual style which is featured in music videos and fashion. In the early 1980s, pretty much every new pop rock act, and particularly those that featured synthesizers in their sound, was tagged as new wave. It was kind of like any popular song in the 80s because there were so many one-hit wonders during this time. After MTV was launched in 1981, the network promoted new wave acts heavily on the channel, which gave the genre a boost in popularity. It was originally used as a catch-all for the music that emerged after punk rock, just like I mentioned. So between 1976 and 1977, the term new wave and punk were kind of interchangeable. Music historian Vernon Joynson claimed that new wave emerged in the UK in late 1976 when many bands began disassociating themselves from punk. In December of 1982, a Gallup poll, 14% of teenagers rated new wave as their favorite type of music, making it the third most popular. New wave had its greatest popularity on the West Coast. New wave soundtracks were also used in mainstream Brat Pack films. This included 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, and The Breakfast Club, as well as Valley Girl. John Hughes was the director of several of these films and kind of liked the British new wave music and placed songs from acts such as The Psychedelic Furs, Simple Minds, Orchestral Manoeuvres, In the Dark, and Echo and the Bunnymen in his films. And it kind of helped keep the new wave in the mainstream, and several of these songs remain standards of this era. So with that, I would like to introduce the first new wave group, The Police. The Police formed in London in 1977, and for most of their history, the lineup consisted of primary songwriter Sting, which was on lead vocals and bass guitar, Andy Summers on guitar, and Stuart Copeland on drums and percussion. In late November of 1976, while on tour with the British progressive rock Curved Air in northeast England, the band's American drummer met and exchanged phone numbers with a singer-bassist called Sting, and just so you know, his nickname is due to his habit of wearing a black and yellow striped sweater mirroring a wasp. And at the time, he was playing in a jazz rock fusion band called Last Exit. In 1977, Sting relocated to London and on the day of his arrival, sought out Copeland for a jam session. The Police made their first television appearance in October of 1978 on BBC Two's The Old Grey Whistle Test to promote the release of Outlandos D'Amour and hit single Rock Sand. Though Roxanne was never banned, the BBC did ban the second single from Outlandos D'Amour, which was called Can't Stand Losing You. And this was due to the single's cover, which featured Copeland hanging himself over an ice block being melted by a portable radiator. In October of 1979, the group released their second album titled Regatta de Blanc, which topped the UK albums chart and became the first four consecutive UK number one studio albums. The album spawned the hit singles Message in a Bottle and Walking on the Moon, and the album singles kind of failed to enter the US top 40, but Regatta de Blanc still reached number 25 on the US album charts. In March of 1980, the police began their first world tour, which included places that had seldom hosted foreign performers, and this included Mexico, India, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Greece, and Egypt. In 1983, the police released their last studio album, Synchronicity, which spawned the hit singles Every Breath You Take, Wrapped Around Your Finger, King of Pain, and Synchronicity 2. And by this time, several critics kind of deemed them as the biggest rock band in the world. But recording the album, there was a lot of tension and affair with increasing disputes among the band. The three members recorded their contributions individually in separate rooms and overdubbed at different times. Every Breath You Take won the Grammy for Song of the Year, beating Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. Every Breath You Take also won the Grammy for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal, while Synchronicity 2 won the Grammy for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal. Every Breath You Take also won the American Video Award for Best Group Video, and the song won two Ivor Novello Awards in the categories Best Song Musically and Lyrically and Most Performed Work from the British Academy of Songwriters, Composers, and Authors. In 2003, the police were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in their first year of eligibility. In 2004, Rolling Stone ranked the police number 70 on their list of 100 greatest artists of all time. Now, the next band I want to discuss, who also came from England, Duran Duran. So Duran Duran formed in Birmingham in 1978. The group was formed by a keyboardist, Nick Rhodes, and bassist, John Taylor, with the later addition of drummer, Roger Taylor, and after numerous changes, guitarist, Andy Taylor. And just to note, none of the Taylors are related. And finally, lead singer, Simon Le Bon. So these five members featured the most commercially successful lineup. The MTV cable channel and the band were kind of launched at about the same time, and each had a hand in propelling the other to greater heights. MTV needed showcase videos with charismatic performers, and Duran Duran were among the first bands to have their videos shot with a professional movie camera on 35mm film rather than on a videotape, making them look more superior to many of the quickly shot videos which had been MTV staples until then. The band's first album was Duran Duran. It was released on the EMI label in 1981. The first single, Planet Earth, reached the United Kingdom's top 20 at number 12, and follow-up, Careless Memories, stalled at number 37. But it was their third single, which was Girls on Film, that attracted the most attention. This song went to number 5 in the UK, and the video featuring topless women mud wrestling and pillow fighting. This album did peak in the UK top 20 at number 3. The next album was The Real Album, and at first this album did not do well in the US, but was later promoted as a dance album. Real was re-released in the US in November of this year and began to climb to the American charts 6 months after its European success. MTV placed Hungry Like a Wolf and several other Duran Duran videos into heavy rotation, pushing the single and the album into the US top 20 in early 1983, so thanks to MTV, they're becoming famous. The band began 1983 by playing the MTV New Year's Eve Rock and Roll Ball with Hungry Like a Wolf, still climbing the charts in the US, and the American reissue of Rio single to follow in March. And this was to satisfy the America's appetite for their music. Rhodes said later, "But when we came back after Hungary was a hit, it was mayhem, it was Beatlemania. We were doing a signing of Girls on Film video at a store in Times Square. We couldn't get out of the store, the cops sealed off the streets." And a fun fact about this band is Duran Duran's most notable and obvious influence is born from glam-turned-electronic outfit Japan. The musical stylings and attire of Japan critically spilled over into Duran's focus. Simon Le Bon, kind of directly influenced from David Sylvian's look and approach, gave Duran Duran the bait and rendered girls on film a la Japan's Gentlemen Take Polaroids. Singer Justin Timberlake also claimed to be one of their biggest fans. The newest crop of performers to name Duran Duran as influences include Ditto, Franz Ferdinand, Panic at the Disco, Goldfrapp, and Brandon Flowers of The Killers. And he said, "Nick Rhodes is an absolute hero of mine. Their records still sound fresh, which is no mean feat as far as synths are concerned." And after this quick break, we're going to move it over to American-based new wave groups. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Citizens of California may ask the question, how can I vote? Well, Dominican University of California is dedicated to providing the answer to you, and here are a few voting methods you can use. Requesting a vote by mail ballot can allow you to vote from your living room couch, and all you have to do is return your vote ballot through the mail or return in person to your county elections office or on any polling place in your county. And you're done. Still confused? With any further questions you may have, you can text VOTE to go vote or call 800-345-VOTE. Stay safe out there and do not forget to go out and vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department of Dominican University of California. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So moving on from The Police and Duran Duran, let's discuss Blondie. Blondie is an American rock band co-founded by singer Debbie Harry and guitarist Chris Stein. The band were pioneers in the American punk and then the new wave scene of the mid-1970s in New York. Their first two albums contained strong elements of these genres, and although they were highly successful in the UK and Australia, Blondie was regarded as an underground band in the US. They were inspired by the new music scene at the Mercer Arts Center in Manhattan. Chris Stein sought to join a similar band. He joined the Stilettos in 1973, and as their guitarist, and formed a romantic relationship with one of the band's vocalists, known as Debbie Harry. She was a former waitress and Playboy bunny. Harry had been a member of a folk rock band, The Wind in the Willows, in the late 1960s. The band's first commercial success was in Australia in 1977, when the music television program Countdown mistakenly played their video In the Flesh, which was the B-side of their current single, Ex-Offender. Jimmy Destri later credited the show's Molly Meldrum for their initial success, and he commented that, "We still thank him to this day for playing the wrong song." This single reached number 2 in Australia and gave them success. Blondie's third album was titled Parallel Lines. It was released in September of 1978 and produced by Mike Chapman. And it finally broke the band into the American market on the strength of the worldwide hit single, Heart of Glass. Parallel Lines became the group's most successful album, selling 20 million copies worldwide. Heart of Glass was released in early 1979, and the disco-infused track topped the UK charts in February of 1979 and the US charts in April of 1979. And it was a reworking of a rock and reggae-influenced song that the group had performed since its formation in the mid-1970s, updated with strong elements of disco music. Clem Burke later said that this new version was inspired partly by Kraftwerk and partly by the Bee Gees' Staying Alive, whose drum beat Burke tried to emulate. The song was accompanied by a music video filmed at a club in New York City. The music video showcased Harry's hard-edged and playful kind of sexual character, and as well as her famously stiff, kind of marginally disinterested persona. She began to attain a celebrity status that set her apart from the other band members who were actually really ignored by the media. Blondie's next single in the US was a more aggressive rock song, One Way or Another. It reached number 24 in the US. And an alternate single choice, Sunday Girl, became a number one hit. Pearl Alliance is ranked number 140 on the Rolling Stones list of 500 greatest albums of all time. In 1979, Blondie was photographed by Andy Leibovitz and was featured on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And in November of 1980, Blondie's fifth studio album was Auto American. It was released and it contained two more number one US hits, the reggae-styled The Tide Is High, a cover version of a 1967 song written by John Hall of the Paragons, and the rap-flavored Rapture, and which this was the first song featuring rapping to reach number one in the US. In the song, Harry mentions the hip-hop and graffiti artist Fab Five Freddy, who also appears in the video for the song. Auto American featured a far wider stylistic range than previous Blondie albums, including the avant-garde instrumental Europea and the acoustic jazz of Faces and Follow Me. The album went on to achieve platinum success in both the US and the UK. So by 1982, the year the band initially broke up, Blondie had released six studio albums, each kind of exhibiting a stylistic progression from the last. The band is known not only for their stage persona and vocal performances of Harry, but also for incorporating elements in their work from numerous subgenres of music, reaching their punk roots to embrace new wave, disco, pop, rap, and reggae. This band is one of the nation's favorites due to their slower style compared to other bands. This includes the next band I want to introduce, which is The Cars. So The Cars is an American rock band formed in Boston in 1976. Emerging from the new wave scene in the late 1970s, the lineup consisted of singer, rhythm guitarist, and songwriter Rick Ocasek, bassist and singer Benjamin Orr, lead guitarist Elliot Easton, keyboardist Craig Hawkes, and drummer David Robinson. The Cars were at the forefront of merging 1970s guitar-oriented rock with the new synthesizer-oriented pop that was kind of becoming popular and flourishing in the early 1980s. Robert Palmer was a music critic for the New York Times and Rolling Stone and described the Cars' musical style as, "They have taken some important but disparate contemporary trends, punk minimalism, the labyrinth synthesizer and guitar textures of art rock, the 50s rockabilly revival and a melodious terseness of power pop, and mixed them into a personal and appealing blend." The Cars played their first show at Peace Air Force Base in New Hampshire on December 31st of 1976 and spent early 1977 playing throughout England and their developing songs that appeared on their debut album, which was a 9-song demo tape recorded in that year. So as soon as the song Just What I Needed was getting heavy airplay on Boston radio stations, WBCN and WCOZ, by virtue of that airplay, the band was offered record deals from Arista Records and Elektra Records. So the band's debut album, which was The Cars, was released in 1978. It reached number 18 on the Billboard 200, and Just What I Needed was released as the debut single for the album, followed by My Best Friend's Girl and Good Times Rule, all three charting on the Billboard Hot 100. The album featured multiple album tracks that received a huge airplay, such as You're All I've Got Tonight, Bye Bye Love, and Moving in Stereo. So the band's second album, Candy O, was released in 1979, and it featured an album cover created by the famed Playboy artist Alberto Vargas. The album reached number 3 on the Billboard chart, and it featured their first top 20 single and one of their biggest Hits, Let's Go. Follow-up singles were also It's All I Can Do and Double Life, but these weren't as successful. So the Cars reunited and released their most successful album, Heartbeat City, in 1984. Their first single was You Might Think, and it helped the Cars win Video of the Year at the first MTV Video Music Awards. Other hit singles from the album included Magic, Hello Again, and Why Can't I Have You. Drive was their most successful single with Orr on lead vocals, and it gained particular notability when it was used in a video of the Ethiopian Famine prepared by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and introduced David Bowie at the 1985 Live Aid concert at Wembley Stadium in London. So after 7 years of them kind of being inactive, the group did reconvene along with Weezer's Scott Shriner on bass in Orr's stead to play a four-song set, which was You Might Think, My Best Friend's Girl, Moving in Stereo, and Just What I Needed. And this was in 2018 at their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So with that, I will leave you for another quick break. After this break, we will go over the more one-hit wonder bands, starting with The Human League. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Did you know that wearing a mask when outdoors or in public areas while social distancing helps shorten the duration of any pandemic? Maintaining a distance of about 6 feet from any other person helps as well. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So we just left off talking with more American new wave bands. I want to move it on over to more one-hit wonder new wave bands, starting with The Human League. So The Human League is an English synth-pop band which was formed in Sheffield in 1977, and they're the only constant band members since 1977 that has a lead singer and songwriter Philip Oakey, keyboard players Martin Ware and Ian Craig. Marshbooth left the band in 1980 to form Heaven 17. And Ware actually suggested the name The Human League after a group in the science fiction board game Star Force, which was Alpha Centauri. In the game, the Human League arose in 2415 AD and were a frontier-oriented society that kind of desired more independence from Earth. Oakey, Wright, and Marsh kind of agreed with the new name, and in early 1978, the feature became The Human League. The band's live performances began to gain momentum and acclaim, and they were asked to support other growing bands at this time. In June of 1979, The Human League supported Iggy Pop on his European tour before settling into recording their first single for Virgin. So, by February of 1981, the band recorded and rushed out Boys and Girls. Sully and Catherall, who had returned to their sixth form full-time, were not involved in new recording, but were included on the single's front cover. The single reached number 47 in the UK charts, the band's highest chart positions at that point. Oakey kind of acknowledged that he needed to bring in professional musicians, and so Ian Birdie was tracked down and invited to join the band as a new member. Their faith was restored by Boys and Girls, but they believed that the band lacked professional production, as I just mentioned. Oakey was introduced to a veteran producer. His name was Martin Rushent. Rushent's first move was to dispatch the entire band to his genetic studios in Reading, Berkshire, and it was away from the unhealthy atmosphere at their old studio. Sheffield stated that they shared with Ware and Marsh's Heaven 17. The first result of this new session was a single, The Sound of the Crowd. The single became their first top 40 hit. It reached number 12 in the UK. So by this time, the band's commercial success and higher profile had caused their first two albums to start selling again. Reproduction charted for the first time in August of 1981 and eventually peaked at number 34. Travelogue also recharted and returned to the top 30 for several weeks. So both albums would eventually achieve gold status. In 1981, Virgin released a brand new single, which was Open Your Heart, which gave the band another top 10 hit. The band's new album, Dare, was also released in 1981 and reached number 1 in the UK, and it spent a total of 4 weeks at the top spot over the 1981 and 1982 period, and remained in the chart for 77 weeks and eventually going triple platinum. So because of their success, a Virgin executive, Simon Draper, kind of instructed that a fourth single should be released for the album by the end of the year. And his choice was Don't You Want Me. And it was a track that Oki considered to be a filler and the weakest track on the album. Oki fought the decision and kind of believed it would damage the band, but was overruled by Draper, and Don't You Want Me was released in 1981. And it was released with an expensive music video directed by filmmaker Steve Barron. This single went to number one for 5 weeks over the 1981 Christmas period. In a 1995 interview with music journalist, Oki credited MTV for helping the song reach the top of the charts. He said, "I don't want to think we would have had number one if it weren't for the video and MTV. Trying to interpret songs with video is a real problem, but at the same time, we know that we wouldn't be here without the video." Don't You Want Me became the band's biggest hit, selling almost 1.5 million copies in the UK. Dare has since been labeled as one of the pop music's most influential albums. In a retrospective view of the album, Stephen Thomas Erlewine, he was the senior editor of AllMusic, gave Dare a 5-star rating. He wrote, "The technology may have dated, synths and drum machines may have become more advanced, but few have manipulated technology in such an emotionally ineffective way." So, talking about technology advancement, let's talk about Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode is an English electronic music band formed in Basildon in 1980. The group consists of a trio of Dave Gahan, which was on lead vocals and co-songwriting. Martin Gore was on keyboards, guitar, co-lead vocals, and main songwriting. And Andy Fletcher on keyboards. Gore related what was their intent at their beginnings. He said, "My dream was to combine the emotion of Neil Young or John Lennon transmitted by Kraftwerk's synthesizers." So soon after the formation of Composition of Sound, Clark heard a Wirral band Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark, who put output and inspired him to make electronic music. Along with OMD, other early influences were The Human League, Daniel Miller, and Fad Gadget. Clark and Fletcher switched to synthesizers, working odd jobs in order to buy these instruments or borrowed them from friends. David Gahan joined the band in 1980 after Clark heard him perform at a local Scout Hut jam session, and he was singing a rendition of David Bowie's Heroes, and Depeche Mode was born. So the band's first hit single was Just Can't Get Enough with a synth pop single, and it became the band's first UK top 10 hit. The video is the only one of the band's videos to feature Vince Clarke. Depeche Mode debut album was Speak and Spell, and was released in 1981 and peaked at number 10 on the UK album charts. And critical reviews were mixed. It was described as a great album, one they had to make to conquer fresh audiences and please the fans who just can't get enough. So while Rolling Stone was a bit more critical, they called this album PG-rated fluff. So in their early years, Depeche Mode had only really had success in Europe and Australia. All this changed in 1984 when they released the single People Are People. This song became a hit, reaching number 2 in Ireland and Poland, number 4 in the UK and Switzerland, number 1 in West Germany. And it was the first time that the band's single topped a country singles chart. And it was used as the theme to West German TV's coverage of the 1984 Olympics. But beyond this European success, the song also reached number 13 on the US charts in 1985, and it was the first appearance of the Peach Mode single on Billboard Hot 100, and it was also a top 20 hit in Canada. People Are People became an anthem for the LGBT community, and was regularly played in gay establishments such as gay pride festivals in the late 1980s. In the US, the band's first music gained prominence on college radio and modern rock stations such as K-Rock in Los Angeles, K-Quake, The Quake in San Francisco, WFNX in Boston, and WLIR on Long Island in New York. And they kind of appealed primarily to an alternative audience who were kind of disenfranchised with the soft rock and disco that was going on at this time. This view of the band was in sharp contrast to how the band was perceived in Europe. So despite being the increasingly dark and serious tone in their songs, in Germany and France and other European countries, DM was more considered teen idols and regularly featured in European teen magazines, becoming one of the most famous pop bands in the mid-80s. In January of 1990, Enjoyed a Silence reached number 6 in the UK, the first top 10 hit in that country since Master and Servant. A few months later, in the US, it reached number 8 and earned the band a second gold single. It won the Best British Single in the 1991 Brit Awards. So to promote their new album, Violator, the band held an in-store autograph signing at Warehouse Entertainment in LA. This event attracted approximately 20,000 fans and turned into a riot. Some who attended were injured by being pressed against the store's glass by the crowd, but as an apology to the fans who were injured, the band released a limited edition cassette tape to the fans living in Los Angeles. It was distributed through radio station K-Rock. So, Violator was the first Depeche Mode album to enter the top 10 of the Billboard 200, reaching number 7 and staying at number 7 for 74 weeks in the chart. The World Violation Tour was the tour they took, saw the band play several stadium shows in the US. It sold 42,000 tickets with 4 hours for a show at Giant Stadium and 48,000 tickets at Dodger Stadium. Several major artists have also cited the band as a huge influence, and this included No Doubt, Marilyn Manson, The Killers, Coldplay, Muse, Linkin Park. And they also, one thing to note about them is they lent their support to high-profile charities such as Music Cares, Cancer Research UK, and the Teenage Cancer Trust. The band has also supported the Small Steps Project, and a humanitarian organization based in the UK, and it aimed to assist economically disadvantaged children into education. Since 2010, Depeche Mode have partnered with Swiss watchmaker Hublot to support charity. Water aimed of clean drinking water in developing countries. Martin himself stated, "If these bands really care so much, they should just donate the money and let it be. Why can't they do it without all the surrounding hype?" And now it is the bottom of the hour, which means it is time for this week's top stories. Aside from all the political tension occurring at this moment, a 14-year-old scientist from Frisco, Texas, hopes to one day save lives as she finds a potential treatment for the coronavirus. Her name was Annika Trebelu, and she was the winner of the 2020 3 Million Young Scientist Challenge as she researched COVID-19 weapons based on the Spanish flu pandemic. She stated, "I isolated a lead compound from database of almost 698 million molecules. I just wanted to help the world and let children know that they can do whatever they want to accomplish. So her research is now being researched and hopefully will give us some answers. And with that, I'll leave you for a quick break. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Why do we bow? We bow because it's important to exercise our right to bow. We bow on issues that matter to us, such as healthcare, education, the economy, civil rights, and immigration. With our votes, we have the power to shape our country and our communities. Your vote matters. Yeah! So please, register to vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So we went over the majority of the well-known new wave bands. Now, I want to quickly discuss some music that has one-hit wonders but no backstory on the musicians themselves, starting with Tears for Fears. Tears for Fears is an English pop band formed in Bath, England in 1981 by Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith. And they founded after the dissolution of their first band, which the mod-influenced Graduate. Tears for Fears were initially associated with new wave synthesizer bands of the early 1980s, but later the band branched out into more mainstream pop and attained international chart success. Tears for Fears were part of the MTV-driven second British invasion of the US. Orzabal and Smith actually met as teenagers in England. The duo became session musicians for the band Neon, where they first met future Tears for Fears drummer Manny Elias. Neon also featured Pete Byrne and Rob Fisher, who went on to become Naked Eyes. So the band achieved the first taste of success with their third single, Mad World, which reached number 3 in the UK in 1982. And their first album, The Hurting, was released in 1983. The album was a big success and had a lengthy chart run, which was 65 weeks in the UK, and reached number 1 and platinum status. It also reached the top 20 in several other countries and yielded the international hit singles Mad World, Change, and yep, that's it, and Pale Shelter. There we go. All three of these singles reached the top 5 in the UK. The album's success came in conjunction with the array of hit singles. It yielded Mother's Talk, Shout, and Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Head Over Heels as well. And some territories even saw the release of limited edition 10 singles for these hits, and a variety of double packs and picture discs in addition to the regular 7 and 12 formats. On July of 1985, Tears for Fears were scheduled to perform at JFK Stadium in Philadelphia for the Live Aid charity event. However, in the morning of this event, it was announced that the band had to pull out of the show and they were replaced by a blues rock group instead. And the official reason for them actually not being able to perform at this was that two of their backing musicians, which was guitarist Andrew Saunders and Will Gregory, had to quit due to the expiration of their contract. But as a further donation, the band also recorded a slightly rewritten version of one of their biggest hits and released it for the British fundraising initiative Sport Aid, which was a sister project of Band Aid in which people took part in running races of varying length and seriousness to raise more money for African famine relief projects. Sports Aid slogans was "I ran the world," therefore Tears for Fears released "Everybody Wants to Rule the World." Orzabal and Smith kind of had a falling out in partying in 1991, The split was blamed on Arzabal's kind of intricate and frustrating approach to production and Smith's desire to kind of slow down their work. Now, one last band I want to very quickly discuss is Naked Eyes. So Naked Eyes is an English new wave band that rose to prominence in the early 1980s. The band had four US top 40 singles. Naked Eyes were formed by Pete Byrne and Rob Fisher, and as I just mentioned, the two had formerly been part of a band called Neon with future members of Tears for Fears. Naked Eyes were one of the first bands to make significant use of the Fairlight CMI sampling synthesizer on a recording, and their first hit was Always Something There to Remind Me, and it was a cover of the Burt Bacharach/Hal David standard. The band had hits of their own with compositions such as Promises, Promises, When the Lights Go Out, and What in the Name of Love in the US. However, the group never toured due to their technical difficulties of recreating their studio sound in concert, which is kind of why they never gained lots of popularity. And with that, I will leave you for the next show. Thank you so much for listening to The Journey Through Rock, and I hope you will join me next week as we discuss punk rock. My name is DJ Blue, and this is Penguin Radio.